What? I can't believe I'm hearing this. Wait a minute, let me rewind.
Welcome to Wise Ones, a podcast of interviews, best practices and insights for entrepreneurship, finance, and technology, brought to you by the IBD Network, home of the Under the Radar Conferences and Dealmaker Forum. For the best of Silicon Valley, go to www.ibdnetwork.com.
Look at me. Look at me. Now listen very closely.
That doesn't look like the next generation of computing to me. It's old technology.
Welcome back. This is Sean Wise for Wise Words, brought to you by the Under the Radar Network, the fine folks at Dealmaker Media, bringing the best in venture capital and entrepreneurship. Today we're very lucky to have with us the author of the upcoming book, We Are Smarter Than Me, all about the deployment and tactics to use crowdsourcing. I'd like to welcome Barry Limbert, who's the CEO of Shared Insights and one of, what would you say, 10,000 authors on this book, Barry?
5,000 authors to be exact.
Now, I don't see them all.
Thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I don't see their names on the spine, so why don't you tell us a little bit of your book, which I actually think is an onomatopoeia in that it is exactly what it sounds to be. You have a book on crowdsourcing, which was done through crowdsourcing. Why don't you tell us a little bit of background on exactly what is crowdsourcing?
Well, first, you will be seeing all 4,000 to 5,000 names inside the book. Every author will be listed. So although we couldn't fit them all in the spine, which we would love to have done, they will all be on the inside flaps of the book. For us, crowdsourcing is simple. It's outsourcing to a crowd the activity that would normally be sourced to either an expert or a function of a business.
So that all goes back to Jeff Howe's article in the June 2006 Wired magazine, does it not? He started that whole nomenclature, if you will.
That's correct. He basically said that crowdsourcing is outsourcing, not necessarily to India or to China, but outsourcing to a crowd, tasks that you would normally insource to an organization or group of experts.
Now, I've been watching the project for a while, both because I'm interested in crowdsourcing, but at the same time, to me, this seemed like the natural next step. So you had Sir Wicki's Wisdom of Crowds, which basically said that a large group of people could be smarter than specific experts. Then you got Volume 2. You got Don Tapscott's Wikonomics, which talks about how certain companies are deploying this wisdom and participation of crowds. And then your book seems the perfect end to the trilogy in that it's very tactical and it shares a lot of lessons. Would you agree with that analysis?
In fact, that was our intention. Those first two books we called descriptive. And if you remember at the end of the Wisdom of Crowds book, Jim basically says the one paradigm of this book, or oxymoron of his book, is it wasn't written by a crowd. It was written by him as an expert observing crowds. And so our feeling was here were two books that were observer-written books by an expert, both James and Don, and neither of them those books were written by the crowds themselves, who were, in fact, the innovators in crowdsourcing. So we wanted to make our book the first book in which the crowd was explicitly engaged in the creation of the content.
Well, that's absolutely – well, let's peel it back a second. When you're talking about crowd, you're not talking about three people sitting in a room collaborating like they did on Wikonomics. You're talking about a large number. It was 4,300 people registered to participate?
That's correct. There were about 4,300 people that registered to participate. About 20% of them actively participated, and they created about 700 and some odd forum or discussion posts and about 1,600 wiki posts. So approximately 10 or 15% of the members or approximately 250 to 400 were actively involved at any one time.
So what's interesting about that is while I consider this probably to be the first good crowdsource book, crowds have been working together online to help the masses. If you look back at even Google, which is PageRank, which uses that to tell what's more important to you, is based on individuals. You have eBay's reputation system, Amazon's credits and reviews, all based. Is this the natural next step where you're going to start to see the real-world items being created by the crowd?
Well, I would argue that my kids have been actively acting as a crowd both in the early versions of MySpace and Facebook. So if we can define the group as I call anybody that's under 21 and all the rest of us, The people who are under 21 have been doing this for basically most of their young adult lives, anything from age 10 and beyond. For the rest of us, which is anybody who I would say who can drink and drive legally together, this is the natural extension of where businesses will go, where they'll stop thinking about outsourcing their key jobs to offshore, you know, to as inexpensive sources of labor, which is, you know, I'll call it India and China, and maybe other parts of Eastern Europe, to really just outsourcing non-functional activities and even sort of even major functional activities to groups of constituents that surround the company. That could be their customers, it could be their partners, it could be their investors, to any group of people who have an actual interest or prospective interest in a company's product, services, or any offerings of that company.
This sort of goes back to one of the original definitions in business. You know, are you looking after your shareholders or your stakeholders? It's almost as if you have an extended enterprise. When I read the book, each chapter seems dedicated to a different area of commercial activity. So I think it was CWEO, and it was R&We, and there was an HR reference. But each chapter, what was the most amazing example that you saw that a business unit was outsourced?
Well, I think there are no shortage of them. There were a few that I really liked, which is product innovation. I mean, customer service has surely been around for a while, and you gave some examples of where people are doing ratings and feedback and even helping each other. I mean, Dell has been doing this for a while, where forums are being used to provide information and insights from one set of customers to another. Product innovation, I think, around the chief marketing officer is probably the next function that we found interesting, where new products were being created no longer by inside people who supposedly were experts, but rather by customers who had better understanding of their wants and needs. And although companies probably don't like the idea of their customers knowing more than they do about feature functionality, I would argue, in fact, we are, as customers, better experts of what companies should build than the companies are themselves. So we found that very interesting, and I think a good one, which is well known, is Procter & Gamble, outsourcing a lot of products now to 850,000 housewives rather than to 8,500 internal R&D professionals. Market research was another very good one, where we saw people creating market research forums that allowed products and services to be tested in the marketplace. And probably one of the most exciting ones was R&D, where Innocentive was creating markets where people who had problems were essentially interacting with people who had solutions to those problems in very proprietary areas called biotech. And you can imagine how that really does upset the apple cart between pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies. So Innocentive was a good example where they were not just outsourcing all three functions, customer service, market research, and product innovation. They really were outsourcing the last piece of it. They were outsourcing the manufacturing and development of the most fundamental products and services that that industry can create.
Now, you gave a few examples there, but literally the book is filled page after page with examples for each functional unit to be involved. Now, I had a difficulty trying to figure out, you know, which of it was wisdom of crowds, which of it was participation of crowds. Now, I went into a post that I found on Michael Sikorsky, who is the CEO of Cambrian House, where he talks about the two differences. So can you explain the difference between, say, the wisdom of crowds and the participation of crowds for those people who are trying to get a handle on it?
And here, our argument is that there is not much of a difference. In fact, we really do think that a large group of people, when they work collectively and collaboratively, are, in fact, one participating as a crowd. And if you harvest their insights and let them act, they will ultimately not just participate but lend you their wisdom. And so our view is maybe some companies might think, well, gee, participation is just grabbing their information and using it to run your business. And others are the wisdom where using their business and information to do something different. So I think we think that that is a difference, a difference that has none at all. It's just a definitional issue where wisdom and participation are really quite the same when you give people the power to interact.
Well, Barry, when we come back from the break, I'm going to get right back to it because you actually didn't just write about crowdsourcing. You used the crowdsourcing technique to write the book. And I want to talk about the author's role in all this, and we'll be right back on Wise Words.
It's sponsor time!
Hey, you.
Yeah, you. Talking to you. Look at me. Canadian Tech Mob. That's what it's all about. You need to join. Hit the website. www.canadiantechmob.com. Show your support. Join the mob.
And we're back. I'm here with one of 4,000 plus authors of the upcoming We Are Smarter Than Me. Now, when is the book out, Barry?
October 27th, I think, is the date.
But Amazon is accepting pre-orders now.
That is correct. They have been since the spring of this year.
Now, how does it feel? This is your third book that you've been involved with as a leading author. But what about your own experiences in writing your previous two books compared to this? What was that like?
In fact, this is my fourth book. My third book never made it to the published environment. The first two books were all the same. The first book was a presumption against my will, was a presumption that I was smarter than we. And that meant that I, as an author, could have a point of view about what people could or should do, and I, as an expert, espoused those thoughts in a document called a book, which others consumed. This is antithetical to this. This is a book where the authors are, in fact, the experts. I'm not. I'm just the messenger, if you might think of that, and conveyor of that, in which the messenger is basically taking the wisdom and participation of 4,000 people and aggregating it, putting it together, just like Wikipedia does, in an easy-to-use, easy-to-digest format that others can consume to basically improve the way they run their businesses. I'm a conduit.
And that's necessary in most communities. That's something that I saw throughout the book. What else is necessary to really harness crowdsourcing?
Well, you went very quickly there. I think the first thing that's necessary, and I love what you just said, is communities require management. So whether it's in your physical world, a valuable community normally has someone who's the caretaker, the party giver, the party organizer, the director of activities. Those things are true in the virtual world like they are in the physical world. And so if you notice that Amazon and eBay have basically each of them 1,000 people that are responsible for the vitality and purity and clarity of the community itself and its activities, it's true in the physical and virtual world. I think the second thing, which is really quite different than traditional business, is what we found is you had to give up control. That was probably one of the biggest lessons we learned in writing this book as well. Obviously, there were some very big institutions involved, which was Wharton, MIT, ourselves, and Pearson. We're small fries in that group. But we found was every time we engage or we tried to lead as opposed to follow and facilitate, we disrupted the process because the crowd wanted control. And yet all of us from big organizations were used to controlling the crowd, as opposed to letting the crowd control us. And that was our second major lesson learned.
Absolutely. Where do you see this world of crowdsourcing going next?
It's funny you should ask. I think it's going to spread in the business world more slowly than we might imagine, although it can be far more pervasive than any of us imagine. And the reason why I think it's both slower and yet more pervasive is that the companies that I work with, which are hundreds of companies, are still run by traditional leaders who still think command control. No matter what they say, and they may give homage to empowerment, they really do believe in command to control, lead from the top. Communities lead from the bottom. Let everybody take an active role in what happens, even if they don't work for the company, and to give up control. So I think it's going to take some time for corporate leaders to get comfortable that crowdsourcing is not controlling your crowds, but letting your crowds control you. Once they get experience with it, what they're going to realize is that the power of crowds can accelerate the company's innovation, their sales, their marketing, even their profits. And once they get a taste of it, it's going to accelerate corporate adoption.
Accelerate corporate adoption. And that's going to be a scary thing when it gets combined with the graying of corporate America, which is going on, and the rise of the millennials, which are all starting work now. So we could actually see in the next 10 to 15 years this become a very pervasive business topic. So if you're thinking about learning more, I would highly recommend We Are Smarter Than Me on bookshelves in mid-October. Thanks very much, Barry.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
This has been Sean Wise for Wise Words. We'll be right back.
It's sponsor time!
Are you frustrated searching on the web and not being able to find what you're looking for? We've got your solution. Zigtag makes it easy to search, save, and share any information that's important to you, be it your latest recipes, information on your next big vacation, researching your competition or writing a business report, or even your school paper. Anything that's important to you, Zigtag makes it super easy to search, save, and share. For more information, visit www.zigtag.com.
And that wraps up another interview and another podcast. You've been listening to the Wise Words Podcast, brought to you by the fine folks at IBD Network. For the best of Silicon Valley, go to www.ibdnetwork.com. Tune in next week for more best practices, insights, and interviews on entrepreneurship, finance, and technology. Till then, I'm your host, Sean Wise. You can reach me at www.seanwise.com. Thank you, and good venture.